Okay, welcome to lecture 9 of our course. Today we're going to continue talking about dimensional reduction. Last time we were talking about dimensional reduction using a certain method called principal component analysis, or PCA. And today we're going to look at a new method called T-distributed stochastic neighbor embedding, which we'll just refer to as TSNE. Then also during the lecture, you're going to be introduced to what the Kullback-Leibler or KL divergence is, and we're also going to start talking about in a bit more detail the idea of generative modeling and maximum likelihood estimation. So let's start with the first point. So we're going to just let's just kind of revisit the setup of dimensional reduction. So the idea is we have a data set with M points that we start with. And each one has n components, and often the number of components is quite large. And what we want to do is apply some kind of dimensional reduction algorithm. So that we get a new data set still has M points, but now these points have n prime components, and in particular, something nice which we're going to try to have in this course is that if we go down to one, two, or three components, m prime, then we can visualize. So this is the setup we were doing. So last time, we looked at accomplishing this goal using PCA. And I won't remind you of all the details of that method, but I'll just remind you that it was a linear method. So that was imposing a restriction on the type of transformation we can apply to go from x to x prime. And in the tutorial today, we're also going to examine PCA. But today we're going to look at another algorithm, and this one is nonlinear. So before I get into showing you the details of that algorithm, let me just mention, you might hear this, oh, this algorithm is nonlinear, so it seems just better than PCA. And so let me just say from the beginning that there are drawbacks to using this more sophisticated algorithm as well. And one that we're going to develop an understanding for through the tutorial and homework is that something really nice about PCA is that we get a lot of information about how this transformation actually happens. And so we're able to interpret a lot about our data set based on the results of the PCA algorithm. Whereas this new algorithm we're going to study today, it's a lot harder to interpret the results. So kind of similar to how in feed-forward neural networks, we have a really sophisticated and flexible algorithm, but it's not always so easy to interpret. And I'm just kind of stating that for now, but it'll become more clear as we see some examples, I think. Any questions so far about like the setup or the goals? Okay, so let's talk about dimensional reduction using TSNE. So an important quantity, is a distribution that we define that helps us measure something called the similarity between points. So a lot of what we do in this algorithm is going to be about studying this similarity of points. So the way this is defined is that we look at this exponential quantity, which takes into account the distance between points. It also has this sigma parameter, which is a free parameter that you get to define. And then we normalize this. And this is what we choose if I have two different points, and then I also set that, where do I write this? Maybe over here. That the similarity for two points that are the same is just zero. And a way you can think of this in words, or the way we want to kind of interpret it in this algorithm, is the probability that some point xi, this is kind of a loose definition, but the probability that it would choose the point j as its neighbor. So we're going to assume that a point is going to choose something as its neighbor based on how close it is. And we're choosing that, we're saying here that neighbors are chosen based on some kind of a Gaussian probability distribution. So, I don't know if that way of paraphrasing things is all that useful, but it's just kind of a way of just reminding you that, okay, if we have two points that are closer, this similarity is going to be higher because they're closer to each other in space. And so we would be more likely to choose that point as a neighbor. So we can also think of the idea of a neighborhood of a point. So the points that have a higher value of this P are within the neighborhood of some point xi. And actually, in TSNE, I think they initially implemented the algorithm using this distribution, and then found that if you have, say, one point that's an outlier from all of the other points, that's very far away from all of the rest of your data, then you're still going to have for that one point some values where this this similarity is quite high, but really that point is just has not really any neighbors. So it turns out to make more sense and work better to use a symmetrized version of this. So this tends to be the distribution that's actually used. So again, just because of this outlier issue, we tend to use this symmetrized version. So that rather than just deciding if a point is closest to you, you also consider if you are closest to it. And that now that we've introduced this, we can say the goal of TSNE in terms of this distribution . So just like in all dimensional reduction algorithms, we're trying to find a lower dimensional representation x prime. But for TSNE, what we're going to try to do is find such a representation that preserves the similarity. Now, let's define what this similarity will be for our lower dimensional representation. So for the lower dimensional data, we're going to call it Q instead of P. And of course, it's going to be in terms of the primed coordinates. So the function that I use here, I'm just going to call it F, and I'll discuss how we choose that in a second. And then again, I'm going to normalize. And again, for two points that are the same, I'm going to say the similarity is 0. Now, you might think that, okay, we just want to preserve this similarity. We're looking just at lower dimensional data. I'm still just going to use like the same Gaussian that I did back here. But it turns out that this is not the case. This is not what is done in this algorithm, and I'll explain why. So we actually end up using a different distribution here. I think there's different names for it, but in the paper where this algorithm is presented, they call it the T-student distribution. And that's kind of where you get the name, this T-distributed stochastic neighbor embedding. So we end up using a different distribution than we did in the original case. And I'm going to try to justify for you why that is. And before I do that, one point that you'll kind of see as we progress through studying the algorithm, but in order to kind of explain why we choose this distribution, I just kind of need to state for now. So we want to preserve the similarity. But we're going to see that we're actually more than anything going to prioritize preserving the short distance information, because we have to make choices in some cases of which points we want to preserve the similarity for. So the algorithm, as we'll see, is going to choose to prioritize the ones that are close. So if two points are farther away, they might end up being farther or closer, but we're going to tend to prefer that points that are close still tend to be close. Okay, so now I want to spend a few minutes just talking about why we choose to use this distribution here. So just like yesterday when I was trying to present some ideas of PCA, I'm going to draw you some pictures. Where I'm going to try to go from starting from a two-dimensional space and going down to one-dimensional. Again, often we'll start from much higher dimensional space, but I'm just choosing a case where I can draw things. So let's say this is the space, and maybe I have maybe these are the points that I have in my original space that I'm given. And let's say the distance between these two is 1. The distance between these two is 1, and these are forming right angles, so that the distance between x2 and x1 is root 2, x0 and x2. Now, if I take this idea as a given that we're going to prioritize preserving the short distances, I'm going to go down to 1D space here. So let's say I start by just putting x0 prime here. Well, I want to preserve the short distances, so I'm going to want to put x1, the point corresponding to x1, a unit 1 away, because that's the shortest distance that I have. So then here I'm going to have distance one. And then another place where I have the same small distance of distance one is between point one and two. So then I only have one choice remaining for where I could put x2 prime. If I want it to be distance one away from point one, I'm going to have to put it here. Well, I mean, I could put it in the same point as x0, but then all of a sudden I'm saying that x0 and x2 are in the same place where they were the furthest points in the original space. So this would probably be what I would choose to do in that case. And now all of a sudden these other points are going to be forced to be further apart from each other than they were before. So this is just one very simple illustration of a more general problem that you get when you go from higher to lower dimensions, called the crowding problem. And there's a paper on this TSNE method, which we're gonna, you're gonna read part of it for the next, the homework too. So you can read about that in more detail. But the idea is that in a higher dimension, we have many more options for how points can be equidistant from a given point than we do in the lower dimension. So things get crowded, and we end up having to kind of spread things out a little bit more in terms of distance because of that. So now, with this in mind, let's talk again. Let's really try to see, why would it be that we would choose this distribution over just a Gaussian? So as a reminder, we don't need to preserve distances. We want to preserve similarity. So we should choose a distribution that enables us to do that. Or actually, sorry, before I go on, maybe I'll just ask if kind of this idea makes sense, kind of the general idea that we're going to have to make some choices and it's going to tend to push the further points even further apart. Does this kind of, can you kind of see the vague argument of how that makes sense? Yeah, any questions on that? Okay. The first time I saw that, I kind of had to spend a while thinking about it. So. Okay, so let's consider the similarity. As a function of the distance. And let me get some different colors. Okay. Okay, so let's start by drawing a Gaussian distribution. Okay, and let's say that, actually let me draw both. And so the distribution, this T student one, it's a little bit broader, has a like a fatter tail. I don't like the green, it looks too similar. Let me choose a different color. It looks more like this. Okay, so let's say that in my, so if I consider this example, in my original space, my points are root two apart. So here I'm just labeling on the y-axis what my similarity is. But you'll remember that if I were to use this example, I see that I'm going to be forced to go to distance 2 apart in this simple example, which would be down here if I was just using a Gaussian distribution. So you would see that the problem here is that now this similarity is too suppressed. So it turns out that it's better to use this fat tail distribution, because then I have a chance of still having a distance 2 for them, but it could have a higher similarity because the similarity is just going to be broader. So now, so in this example, I'm drawing it as if they're the same. Of course, we're not going to be able to guarantee that it's always going to be exactly the same, but just that we tend to be able to have a better chance of preserving the similarity if we choose this broader tail distribution. Are there questions about this? Idea. I'm going to give you just a second in case you have questions, because I know it's a little subtle. Okay, let me write a few more things down and just interrupt me if you have questions, because I'll just talk a little bit more about this method. So let me just kind of write some of this argument in words. So just to kind of like remind you of kind of the notation that we're using, so Q is the similarity distribution defined for the new space. So if we used a Gaussian there, then the similarity in the new space for points 2 and 0 would be much smaller than P20, and our goal in this algorithm is to preserve the similarity. So the idea is that this T student distribution has a longer tail. And that's what allows us to better preserve the similarity, because we know we're going to have this crowding problem. Let me ask again if there's any questions on that. Okay. So we've kind of talked about what we're trying to do, but now let me give you just kind of an overview of the details of how you actually find this representation. So just like we've seen in feed-forward neural networks, we're going to do some kind of iterative optimization. And just like before, we're going to use an algorithm like gradient descent to do that. And as you may recall, when we're doing this optimization, we usually have a function in mind that we want to minimize. We will call that a cost function. So in this case, the cost function that is often used is called the KL divergence. So we're going to be minimizing this KL divergence between points. And the way that we can write this is in terms of these similarity distributions. And we call this the KL divergence. So this is the cost function that we work to minimize. Let me just tell you a few points about this KL divergence. So you can show that this is always greater than or equal to 0. You can prove that if you want to using Jensen's inequality. Another feature it has, which is something we would like, is that if we really were able to get these similarities completely the same, then this KL divergence would be 0. So if for every point we have the same thing, then this KL divergence would just be 0. And let me also just note that this is not the only place where the KL divergence will show up. It's also used within a lot of other unsupervised learning algorithms. So this is just the first time it's come up for us, but we'll even see it again later today when we talk about generative modeling.
I'm trying to find the logic here. Before, in supervised learning, we had some labels to compare and kind of define a cost function. So comparing the results with the labels. What are we doing here?
So, well, in this case, what we're doing is we're taking a data set and we're trying to look at it in a lower dimension. And so what we're doing now is we're defining something called a similarity distribution. So it's some kind of probability distribution. It's based on the distances between the points. And then we define another distribution in the lower dimensional space. And so what we're trying to do is update these new coordinates in the lower dimensional space so that these distributions are the same. And so we're looking at the cost function between those two distributions. And the goal, and they're based along around the distances between points in this case.
The less the cost function is, it means the less the distance between the distributions.
Yeah, it means the distributions are more similar. Yeah.
And everything here is a kind of function of that sigma parameter there. Am I
Yeah.
How we choose that?
That's a hyperparameter that you get to choose. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. So let me just quickly say, just a few other notes about this algorithm. So just to remind you, so the p distribution is just fixed by your data set. So for whatever data you have, you can calculate this and it's not going to change. So what you do in this algorithm is you adjust the x prime coordinates. So that your Q distribution is as close as possible to your P distribution. Now is the point where we can see that we're going to have more priority on the shorter distances. And the way you can see this is by looking at the expression for your cost function, and you see that this p variable acts as a weight here. And this p is going to be much larger when the points are close. So that's going to be weighted as what's much more important in the sum to calculate your cost. And something that I'm just going to state for now, but I think this is going to be easier to appreciate once you look into this algorithm in the homework, is that, so once you do the tutorial today and then look at the homework, you'll see that this resulting lower dimensional representation is harder to interpret. Than what we get out of PCA. In PCA, we get this linear transformation, and we can read a lot into what it physically means to have this type of transformation be meaningful in our data. In this case, we'll see that it's more difficult to interpret the transformation that we get. Okay, so now I was going to move on to talking about a little bit about generative modeling, but let me see if anyone has any other questions about this. So maybe while I erase the board, I'll just say that next week for this class, we're going to have three different guest lectures. So there's going to be a guest lecture that on generative modeling, which is what I'm going to start talking about right now. It's going to be on Tuesday next week. So, you know, pedagogically, it would make more sense if it was immediately after this lecture, but just the way that it works best for those guest lecturers that we have coming in. That's going to be next week on Tuesday. So we'll kind of start talking about a few of the basic concepts in generative modeling today, and then Mohammed will continue that discussion next week on Tuesday. One other thing I want to make sure I mention about this, and I'll also say it in an email, but I'll just say it as many ways as possible to make sure that everyone knows, is that for that lecture next week on Tuesday, the time is going to be changed from 9 a.m. to 11:30. That's just works better for the lecturer. So we've changed the time for next Tuesday's lecture. It's updated in the schedule on the portal for those of you that don't have access to Google Calendar. It's also updated on the Google Calendar for those of you that look at that. So just make a note of that. Just while I'm on the topic of notes, let me also say that our lecture on Monday is this ethics guest lecture by some of the members of the Quantum Ethics Project. And that lecture is gonna be at 9 on Monday. For that one, I'm gonna be sending out an email, but it's gonna be a little different. There'll probably be some external guests coming for this lecture as well. So we've actually set it up that if you wanna watch it on Zoom, you need to register, because it's just a different link. We didn't wanna give out the typical Sci link, because there'll be external people coming. So just note that if you need to watch on Zoom, you will need to fill out this form. You can do it right up until the lecture starts, but just note that it won't be the typical link in the calendar for that one. And that's all gonna be in an email, but I just wanna say it twice. Okay, so now, as we discussed yesterday in unsupervised learning, there's kind of two categories of tasks that we're going to talk about in this course. So one of them is dimensional reduction, which we've talked about and you're going to study in today's tutorial and in the homework. And now let's talk a little bit about generative modeling, which we're really only going to give a little overview of in this course. But as I mentioned yesterday, there's going to be a series of lectures given on some generative modeling methods within a little mini course in May, if you're interested. So as often we have in our setup for these problems, we have some set of data points. Now we're going to assume here that the way these points are generated is from some underlying distribution P data. And usually this is unknown what it is. So what our goal is going to be is tune the parameters that correspond to a model. So I'll just call those lambda, some set of parameters that define a model. You know, if I think back to feedforward neural networks, the set of parameters that define that model are my weights and biases. So I'm not telling you the details of the model yet, because we're just talking more generally about the setup. But whatever the model is, it's going to have some parameters that define it. And what I want to do is have it be that the distribution corresponding to this model is close to the distribution of my data. So this is the model distribution. And this is the unknown distribution that underlies our data. So you might immediately be able to see that, okay, again, we have a case where we're trying to get two distributions to match. So a way that we could do this is, again, using this KL divergence. So in this case, we want to look at the difference between the data distribution and the model distribution. And I can write that like this. Now, a way that we'll often write this is actually as an expectation value. So if my data points x are taken from this distribution p data, then I can just write that like this. And just to be explicit, this is the expression that I'm using to write that. So again, we just immediately see another place where the KL divergence will come in. Now, I'm not showing you how we go about minimizing this, because this is something we would talk about more specifically in the context of an actual model. So I'm just kind of giving you the setup, and then we're going to continue this discussion with Mohammed next week. But any questions about that, just let me know. Okay, so we can state the goal of generative modeling in terms of minimizing this KL divergence. We can also state it in terms of something else, which I'm going to show you. So we'll call this maximum likelihood estimation. Okay. So recall that in what we're given in generative modeling, we're given a set of points. We don't know the distribution that's used to generate it. But we might assume that what we actually want to assume is that for the points we're given, they probably have quite high probability. So we could instead think of a goal as maximizing the probability that our model gives for the m given data points. Now, of course, there's different ways we could consider doing that. We could say that the way we choose our parameters is using this maximum likelihood idea is that we look in parameter space such that what we maximize is some product of all of these probabilities that we get. But something that you, I don't know if you might have seen in the numerical methods course, is that often multiplying many probabilities, all of those are less than one. They can be small. This can be numerically unstable to do this. So even though this would allow us to satisfy this idea of maximizing this p for all of the data points, if I solved this, it turns out to be more stable to use something else. Again, this is not the only thing that you could use, but let's just take a logarithm. Like this.
Excuse me. Numerically unstable means that we have large numbers.
Sorry, say that again.
Numerically unstable means we have very large numbers.
Well, I think what I would mean by that is that, you know, maybe you have just one probability that is very small. Well, then you're multiplying by a zero, and then everything can become extremely small here, right? So it's going to be very sensitive to anything that's like a little bit too small. It's going to, whereas here, you end up getting a sum here. So having, you know, maybe one value is, it's going to kind of suppress the effects of something like that. Any other questions? Any other questions? OK, so in the last few minutes, let me just show you something cool about this expression. So just one important note that's going to be important in what I'm about to show you. Just remember that some data points that you have in your distribution might be the same. So this doesn't have to be the case, but it's possible that you have xi equals xj for some values of I and j. We also need to assume that each xi is drawn independently. And of course, ensuring that this is done independently is a, in general, it's a really big thing to think about in numerics, is how to ensure that you have independent samples. But let me just state that as just an assumption for now. So using this logarithmic expression that I've written down, so I can first, to make this more clear, let me just multiply and divide by m for a second in this expression. So now I'm going to take a look at everything in my brackets here. So we see that I'm just summing over all of my data points, and I have this factor of 1 over m. But because this is this, I can basically assume to be the distribution of my data. So each of those m data points, we could assume, has a probability of 1 over m. And of course, we could still have the case where some of them are chosen twice, so this probability might not just always be this. So if I have a big enough sample of data, I could say that this is approximately equal to 2 to this, where instead of summing over just my data set, I'm going to say that, well, I could say this is actually approximately the same as summing over all of my data. And using that expectation value expression from before, you see I can just write that like this. And now just need like maybe one more minute to relate this back to something else that we've seen. So now let me remind you of the KL divergence, which we saw earlier. So I could write the expression we saw for the KL divergence as these two different terms here. Now let me just ask if anyone can see. So remember that the data set is just something that I'm given. So what does that tell you about the value of this first term? If I just have a fixed data set, what I'm trying to do as I minimize is adjust these lambda parameters, right? But I'm not going to be changing anything about my data. So this is constant once you have a given data set. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's called the entropy of the data set. And I don't mean to say it's constant for all data sets, but once you're given your data, it doesn't change. But by constant, I mean that it doesn't depend on the model parameters lambda. And now, if you look at this term here, you'll remember that in KL divergence, I'm trying to minimize this quantity. But look at, if you look at this expression here, I'm taking the expectation value of this p lambda. Here, I was trying to maximize this quantity by looking over the model space. Here, I'm trying to minimize, but there's a minus sign out front. So what we see is that minimizing the KL divergence is actually equivalent to this maximum likelihood estimation. So really all I've shown you in introducing these ideas of KL divergence and maximum likelihood estimation is just kind of two different ways of phrasing the goal. And they end up being kind of equivalent ways to think about this. So this is just two different ways that you can think about the goal of generative modeling. And so again, just to restate, all I've shown you so far is just kind of some overarching goals that we have in generative modeling and the quantities that we're trying to maximize or minimize. We haven't talked about any specific architectures or algorithms or models for this, and Mohammed is going to introduce some of those to you next Tuesday. But I'm happy to take any questions that you have for now.
I have a very general question.
Yeah.
So where is the learning? As I see, it's just finding a probability distribution for a data set.
Yeah.
The new data set is, again, from the beginning, everything.
Yeah, so the learning is in adjusting these lambdas, these lambda parameters of your model, which again, so the way you're actually going to do that is going to depend on your algorithm, but you're going to apply some kind of an iterative algorithm to update these parameters. And by updating the parameters, you're going to be changing your distribution. And by changing your distribution, you're going to be changing your cost here, because we think of this KL divergence as our cost.
Is that a way to make that algorithm better? I mean, the way I used to think about learning is that we do something on a data set and then we just repeat that in a new data set. And I call that learning. Machine did something previously and just repeat that again.
So, but why are you saying that something from what I've described needs to be faster? Like, I haven't described any specific implementation. So you mean, yeah, I don't know if I'm quite understanding the question.
Yeah, I've also heard.
So you're saying the way you think of learning is, I guess, the idea of expanding the amount of data that you have. Is that what you're saying?
Sorry.
You're trying to increase the amount of data that you have, and so that's what you're thinking of as learning. Is that what you're meaning, or?
No, I mean, so let's say, like, finding the phase of matter.
Mm-hmm.
I have some distributions and then some labels. The machine learns something between trying to match those phases of matter that labels, and then if I give them some new matters, the machine can find a label.
Right, because it's learned something, so now it doesn't need the labels anymore, you mean. Yeah, okay, so the difference in generative modeling in general, the difference would be you don't have labels from the beginning, so it's not as if we can separate it into a phase where we have labels and then a phase where we don't need them, but what we could say, what you could phrase a goal of generative modeling is that you're trying to, we don't actually know an expression for the data distribution, right? Like I'm putting it here because we're assuming it comes from a distribution, but I don't know this, right? So that's actually ideally what I would like to learn. So what the idea is that we develop a model by adjusting these parameters lambda. This gives us an actual distribution, P lambda, and the idea is that then you could use that to generate new samples of data. So you would still be, I mean, it's not quite the same, of course, because it's unsupervised learning, so there's no labels, but you're still kind of separating it into a learning phase and then a phase where you're doing something else, in this case, generating new data samples. Any other questions? Okay, well, bring more questions if you have them to this afternoon's tutorial. I'll see you guys then.